Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres.
Go Padres.
Can everything turn around so quickly for us, Nick?
Yeah.
Is it possible?
Hey, look at the Braves. The Braves are World Series champions.
Yeah.
And so I didn't think it happened. You can lose Acuna and still win a World Series. It's great.
It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Yeah. I mean, it just seemed like a week ago, the Padres clubhouse was falling apart. We lost our manager. And then all of a sudden, AJ Preller is again this super mega wizard GM with what he pulled off. I'll let you drop the big news.
Yeah. If you haven't heard yet, AJ Preller hired, I guess, the most liked person in the history of baseball, Bob Melvin from he got him from the A's. And, you know, I'm excited about it. I've always liked him. He seems like he's a very respected person around the game, and he has a lot of experience. And, we decided to reach out to an A's podcast called the Town Tailgate Podcast, and they've joined us tonight. What's up? I'm going to introduce you guys to Chris Madrigal and Julio Reynoso from the Town Tailgate Podcast. What's up, guys?
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, hello. For having us, guys. Thanks for sending the invite. It was a little bit shocking. I'm not gonna lie to you. Of the podcasts I expected in my life to be guests on, Padres were probably down at the bottom of that fucking list. But just because, like, no offense, but like, it's like not an offensive thing. It's just like there's not much of a rivalry there. We don't really play each other that much. You know, like, I don't know. It's just about it.
A Padres pod would make more sense than a Royals pod.
Right.
but hear me out, Julio. A Royals pod in some way can be correlated to 2014 in the wild card game. So that
we don't talk about that,
but that wouldn't be that out of left field. Just saying.
Well, oddly, you know, the Royal, there's always been a conversation in our Twitter sphere about like how our ownership was obsessed with those Royals teams, and that's why they went after Hosmer, because he's a part of that. And, you know, right when this ownership group that we have now, they basically bought the team in 2012, didn't really start doing anything until after that World Series. They started doing stuff in like 15. And we always joked about how, you know, the ownership was obsessed with those Royals teams. But I don't know. I mean, should we start off the podcast with an apology to you guys? I mean, I don't know. It seems like Bob Melvin is just loved by everybody in the A's universe up there. And this was a surprise to you guys, right? I mean, it just kind of popped out of nowhere.
Well, yeah, he was in Oakland since 2011. Yeah. He's from the East, San Francisco East Bay. He went to Cal Berkeley. He's very
A's fan.
Grew up an A's fan. He's tied to this organization, to like blood in and blood out, really, over these last 10 years.
And he signed an extension in August.
It was only 1 year, but he still signed an extension, and he's probably like the most influential manager they've had, like him and Tony La Russa, like the two guys. You're really going to think about it. So,
yeah,
it's just been kind of a hell of the last few months, really, as an A's fan. It kind of first started off when Ray Fosse was left away from the booth because he was battling cancer, and unfortunately, he passed away earlier in October. Ramon Laureano got suspended for juicing. Chris Bassett takes a line drive off the face, ruins our season.
Very unproductive meeting with city council that they had that just completely kind of caught the A's and also the fans out of in like just out of left field on top of all that stuff too.
Oh, stadium.
Because you guys are in ballpark talks, right? Yeah. We know that well.
For the past 20 years of our fandom, right, they've been at ballpark talks.
So you guys released an episode on Monday about what happened, you know, losing Bob Melvin. And you guys mentioned something about how they basically in 2014, the A's basically sold the fan base on having a new stadium coming, and they were going to start spending money and all that. And you guys seem to think that this is ushering in another cycle of that they're going to have a new manager, probably not as good as Bob Melvin, because how could you find anybody, you know, he's a top manager, and this could be more of the same where you don't really have a stadium deal and they're going to be retooling or rebuilding, however you want to say that, you know, is that basically what you guys are staring down the barrel of?
The thing is, this 2014 wasn't the first time they sold us on that. 2007 was the first time they sold us on that. They had made their first appearance in the ALCS since 1991. I want to say it was 91. And that team was very, you know, very successful. They had a lot of older talent. Frank Thomas was on that team. Milton Bradley was on that team. But they also had and Barry Zito was on that team. But they also had a lot of really young talent. Nick Swisher. I think Mark Kotze was even on that team. He was a
former
little older,
Padre great Houston Street.
Houston That's Street right. was also Houston on that
all-star,
team.
All-star.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan Heron was a pitcher on that team. Rich Harden. So they had a lot of these really good young pieces, and you know, 2007 doesn't work out, so at the deadline they just completely clean house, and Lou Wolf was the head owner at that time, the main owner at that time, and he kind of sold the fan base on, we're going to have this new stadium, and at the time it was Fremont, and then that got scrapped, and then he said we're going to have this new stadium in San Jose, we're going to rebuild, we're going to retool, get all these young players, so that when that stadium eventually gets built in around 2011, 2012, we're going to be a World Series contender. We're going to be a playoff team. So 2012 comes along, you know, Jared Parker, Tommy Malone, Josh Reddick, Yoenis Cespedes, all these stars that, you know, start to finally come to fruition. And it's the same story. Like, there's no movement on the ballpark, like, front. And then, you know, go forward to 2014, Saints in situation. The same situation, but they sell us on this downtown ballpark instead. So it's just like, it's a reoccurring cycle that's been happening over the past 20 years. And it's just like, at this point, like, until there's actual shovels in the ground, I don't know what to believe from the front office. I don't know what to believe from management, from ownership. It's just like, it's just a clusterfuck.
Oh man, I really feel your pain, because we went through a ballpark for the Padres, but that one worked out. And I was just thinking, as you're going through all of this, very similar, almost parallel things we've been living, but we lost the Chargers. And now I'm just thinking, you guys lost the Raiders, and you're still in jeopardy of Oakland in this. I mean, the A's in this. Oh my goodness. I do feel for you guys.
In the world,
because in San Diego, it's just sports pain. So that's all I can share with you.
We lost empathy. The Warriors. Even that's though right. they're only across the bridge, but still, it's like, that's, you know, those are massive culture shift from San Francisco to Oakland. So, like,
crazy.
I think we're both in the, and Chris and I are in the same boat. Like, I think it's going to happen. There's so much more traction that's been going on with this stadium situation than previous attempts. And it looks like Oakland and the county are trying to get it together. I don't know when, but there's definitely a lot of work that's been happening that it's going to happen. But I think these next few 2-3 years of A's fandom is just not going to be the most fun times.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is because you guys took our manager.
Yeah.
And we're also a lot more optimistic too, because even though it seems like, at least from the national media standpoint, that it's very stagnant with the stadium situation. The actual reality of the situation is, if you do your research, that's not the case. Just the city of Oakland is tired of getting bent over backwards from all their professional sports teams, and they've just learned their lesson now. So they're just kind of standing put a little bit more.
So while all this is happening under, you know, I guess he wasn't there at the first cycle, but the, you know, under Bob Melvin, it seems like A's fans just universally liked him pretty much the whole time. I mean, how are you guys deciding whether or not he's a good manager or not? I mean, in what ways does his skill set manifest itself on a day-to-day basis? What do we have to look forward to?
I think the biggest thing that we talked about this when we recorded last night is he's been pretty even keeled throughout his time. Rarely you'll see him kind of, you know, blow up and go over the edge. He's always had his players' backs. And for the Padres, I think that's something you guys can probably vouch for this or not. I think what the Padres lacked a little bit this year was just having the adult in the room, just having, you know, the Tatis Machado thing got blown up way over proportion than it should have when they got in the dugout fight. But I think that probably could have been appraised a little bit if you had your manager, if Jace Tingler probably would have stepped in. And then if you think about it last year too, when, you know, Slam Diego, that was awesome. But when the 3-0 Grand Slam by Tatis right after the press conference, Tingler kind of like threw him under the bus. He was just like, hey, I'm going to talk to him. He's not going to do that again. Bob Melvin's not going to be that guy. He'll be like, it's kind of an old school rule. I'm going to have a talk to him, but that's just the kind of the person Fernando is. And either at the end of the day, I'm going to have his back. You're going to hear him say some stuff like that. Where like,
yeah. Regardless, if he agrees with it or not, he's going to, and if he doesn't, let's say if he felt the same way, he didn't, he agrees in the old school rules. He'd be like, his probably press conference would be like, well, that's a conversation between me and Fernando that I'm going to have.
That's a good one. Yep.
But that, I'm going to keep that between us and don't worry about it. Like that's how he would handle a post-game press conference with that situation.
So I'm a cynical old Padres fan. I'm in my 40s now. So I've been at this losing a long time. And everyone's very excited about Bob coming over. And I get it. I'm excited too. It's better than what we've had in a while. But the thing that is a little bit worrying to me is like, what makes you confident that he would win given the right players? Because overall, he hasn't won yet. He hasn't won the big game. My praise or my excitement under wraps until we win. You know what I mean? Overall, he has a losing record. I know most managers do over the long haul because you have bad seasons mixed in with your really good ones. But as a Padres fan who's getting old, that seeing death look him in the eye down in the future, possibly never winning a World Series. You know what I mean? Like my grandmother who's used to take me to games when I was a kid just passed away recently at 99. And I always thought we'd share this together and it's never going to happen. And so again, Bob is very exciting. I don't want to sound and rain on your guys's, misery right now, but what was he missing to get Oakland to the World Series and win the World Series and in his tenure?
A goddamn payroll.
Yeah, that's it. It's the players, right? Okay.
It's really that simple. And like, so this is just my opinion. So like, for the people out there listening, you can argue with me all you want, but it's my opinion. So I have a right to it. In my opinion, the third most talented roster in all of Major League Baseball just got the best manager in all of baseball. So I kind of think that that's a recipe for tremendous success. Now, what Bob Melvin does best, the two things that kind of me and Julio were talking about yesterday was, I don't know what exactly his methods are for getting good clubhouse chemistry, but he always has had great clubhouse chemistry. The guys have always been just really bonded and they've always just kind of like, just been like brothers in there. I don't know what it is, but they just love hanging out with each other. They love to play the game and he somehow gets that out of them. Also, he always finds whatever the team's strength is. Like for this year, for example, we had really fast guys on the bases, really talented base running. And so he took advantage of that. He decided to steal more, which historically Bob Melvin is not big on stealing bases. If you look at all these teams in the past, he's only ever had like one guy who's had more than 25 stolen bases in the season, which is Coco Crisp. Because when you're Coco Crisp, you don't tell him to stop. Or when you're managing Coco Crisp, you don't tell him to stop.
Let him go.
So this year was the complete opposite of that. He noticed he had a lot of speed and a lot of good base running. So he really took advantage of that, was very aggressive on the bases, sent guys in very close, throw situations. And it kind of worked to our benefit, at least for a few months. That's a very old school style of playing, of managing the game too, and especially in the analytics era. But he noticed that from his team. And he was like, why would I stop my team from doing the thing that we do the best? So doesn't matter, new, old analytics, traditional baseball, he's gonna utilize that to his advantage.
If you look at throughout his run season, it was always kind of the same thing where it was like, oh, they just need the one piece away. And even this year when they were doing end of season conferences, he was just saying like, this is the most talented team I've ever coached that didn't go 35-year-old plus relievers who by the time it got to August, they were done.
Yeah.
Like Sergio Romo had some bright spots in this season and then he just fell off a cliff. Yusmeiro Petit, just working him down like a horse. It finally caught up to him. Jake Diekman, just same thing with him. So like the biggest difference maker, Chris and I were so excited in this trade deadline when they were able to get guys like Andrew Chafin and Starling Marte, Josh Harrison, and Yan Gomes. But I was like, they need one more bullpen arm. And I think now when you're going to have the talent already there, you're going to have an aggressive GM who's really analytically like driven, like what they, like how Billy Bean and David Forrest were with AJ Preller. And you're going to have somebody who wants to spend. They want to win. Like the Padres want to win right now. And that's something that like, he's never had that commitment throughout his whole time. He's probably never had that commitment throughout his whole career. He went from a Seattle team that it was pretty much just the Ichiro show during those years, which was awesome. And then the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And then the Diamondbacks, it was 2007. I think it was 2007 that went to the NLCS, right? When it was like Brandon Webb and Justin young Upton.
Yeah, I guess they did.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And throughout that time, it was the same thing. It was like, cool, he can help get them where they one need to go. But piece. It's just like, yeah, it's just like those constrictions. And it's like, you guys have the ability that, cool, you want to go and trade for finally get rid of Eric Hosmer's contract and go pick up Matt Olson. Well, cool. Here's our two of our top prospects who aren't going to touch the light of day for the Padres because we're so stacked in the field. It's like, you can make those moves however you want. Because
and
like
you guys proved that last year at the deadline when you went and got Mike Clevenger and Darvish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
Darvish, off season.
Okay,
you got Mitch Moreland. You got the two A's. You got Moreland, Mitch Moreland, yeah, and Trevor Rosenthal. Oh boy, that worked great for us guys. Thanks a lot. You could have told us a little bit about that bomb.
Well, what I'm curious about is, you know, we had a pretty disappointing end of the last season, and we go into this off season. We know we're going to have to find a new manager and. Before this hire that seems to be universally praised by everybody in baseball, AJ Preller was under the hot seat a little bit. And we were starting to ask, you know, okay, this guy's supposed to be this super genius outside of the box thinker. And he's never had a winning record in a full major league season under this control. I'm curious if, you know, for A's fans and the fan base, is it, when you have a manager like Bob Melvin, who everybody seems to like and respect, how often does Billy Bean come into the crosshairs with you guys and, you know, bloggers, anybody online talking? I mean, is the fan base getting tired of Billy Bean, or is it all just a financial thing that you guys hone in on? Is it just, we don't have a stadium. We obviously spend the least amount of money in the league pretty much every year. Does Billy Bean catch fire at a certain point? I mean, he's been in control for about 20 years now. I mean, obviously he's the subject of the most important sports book of the last 20 years or so. Where are you guys with Billy Bean, and how does that work?
Julio, do you want to go? Or do you want me to go? Because I think he thinks I'm going to be cynical, but I'm not going to be.
I don't know.
So it's pretty.
I'm saying Julio. I think thinks.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's funny that we're having this conversation because I remember over the summer when they were doing Cooperstown, I threw out a poll. I was like, "Who do you think is going to be our next like person to represent the A's to go to the Hall of Fame?" And like our biggest vote getter was Billy Bean, and some guy.
Yeah.
And some guy afterwards just was like, F Billy Bean. And he had said some other like random derogatory stuff in the past. So I just blocked him and I reposted him. I'm like, look, you can be upset with him now. I get it. But I'm like, the way that this guy shaped not only the A's, but baseball period. Yeah. Like
other
no,
sports,
like, you
other sports.
Yeah. Other sports. Like, yeah. Like, look at freaking Paul DeBatista got hired by the Browns and he worked for the A's.
Daryl Morey.
Yeah, Daryl, that's right. So it's like, I think it's weird because like we all love him, we all respect him. I don't know how hands-on he is anymore because David Forrest is like the GM. It sounds like they're kind of more of a one-in-one kind of thing. But like he can only do so much is the thing. Because at the end of the day, Chris and I are also like huge Warriors fans. We have been for years. We're not a bandwagon fans, but how drastic the optics of this team change when Joe Lacob and Peter Gruber came over to take over ownership was like extremely evident. Everything changed for the franchise, led to, you know, Steph Curry being the best point guard ever, multiple championships, all this stuff. And a lot of it's because like ownership wanted to win. Well, as great as Billy is and as great as David Forrest is, they're not going to be able to do anything if you're not going to have an owner who's going to be willing to pay up and make some risky moves and sacrifices. And until those that can happen, it's just like, we're kind of just sitting here like, well, we're going to be a good farm system.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, treading it's, water. It's not a Billy Beane thing. It's Billy Beane is, I love Billy Beane for everything that he's done. Everything he's changed the game three times, and he's been able to take advantage of it and put together a winning team out of a whole lot of nothing a lot of times. And he finds value in guys. And I think the best way to show evidence of that, he finds value in guys, utilizes the shit out of it. And then when he's done with them, he's done with them, because not for, because that's what he wants to do, but it's because it's what the ownership allows him to do. And if you look at so many of the stars that the A's have had over the past 20 years, as soon as they leave the A's, I don't know what it is, but they're just not quite as good anymore. Josh Donaldson is the only exception to that rule. And I don't know, maybe Nick Swisher. No, probably not Nick Swisher either.
Nick Swisher did win a World Series.
That's true.
I mean, but Hudson
was good for a couple years.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But he had his best years with the A's. Yeah. And that's fair. But I don't know what it is. He finds these guys and he makes it work. Now, if he had a payroll, I think it's a different story. I will say the one negative thing about Billy Beane is his reputation. So we've gone through three owners in that time. You know, Steve Schott was the one who kind of like, I guess you could say he was the one who molded him in his cauldron and made him the monster that he is. So can't really discredit him. But when Lou Wolf takes over, Lou Wolf is a businessman. So he sees it as, oh, wow, I can be a sports owner and make money off of it. Like, I'm going to utilize the shit out of this guy and his philosophy and try to make as much money as possible. Because the entire time Lou Wolf owned the team, they were number one in revenue every year, not number one
payroll.
Overall, yeah, just overall but revenue, so how much money they made. John Fisher did that like even worse, so he shrunk payroll even more than what Lou Wolf did, and he took advantage of it even more. And it's just like, so the reputation of him, unfortunately owners have taken advantage of that, but like for what he's able to do, like it's, yeah. I don't know why he's still here. I mean, the only reason why he's still here is because he still owns part of the team. That's the only reason why.
Yeah.
And I mean, his family is still pretty located. Like his daughter's going through school the Bay Area as well.
Yeah. I mean, if Brad Pitt plays you in a movie, you get to be a little weird, right? After a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, I look at AJ Preller and he is not Billy Beane. He doesn't have the success that Billy Beane has had by any means. But you know, before that hire, it seemed like everybody was kind of really looking at him and saying, you know, like, what is this guy really, what he's all cracked up to be? And then Bob Melvin comes and it seems like it's going, I don't know, Travis, you can back me up here. It seems like it's going to change the entire offseason for us. Like,
Actually?
Yeah.
Do you think that this is his move for, I'm going to save my job, like his Hail Mary to save his job?
Well, if you listen to ownership and they, I mean, who knows what they're just saying, whatever they have to say publicly, but I would think so. I mean, it's a
like,
different pro.
I got this talented team. Let me go get the best manager out there. He's going to save this team. He's going to have a winning season this year. And I'm going to have a job for another couple of years. Like, do you think that is what he was thinking?
I think so. I mean,
I don't think you can get Bob without, like, the ownership also, Seidler, like, backing him 100%, because there's no way Preller just talked that good over dinner. I guess they talked, according to the press conference, they talked for a couple of dinners or whatever. But I noticed Bob talked a lot about how much he respected Seidler. And so there's, I don't know, maybe Preller is this magician that he can just, you know, dangle like a hypnosis over.
I think he does have I think he has an effect on
something
the owner.
Like that, but yeah.
Yeah. I think that like he, they couldn't hire somebody that didn't have experience. They needed a profile like Bob Melvin. His name did not come up at all down here. No, I don't know.
It's so shocking.
This just came out of nowhere. And they were interviewing like Ozzie Guillen. And, you know, we thought maybe they'd give like Will Venable.
Ozzie Guillen. Oh God.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Ron Washington. But, you know,
Ron Washington was my top pick just for experience.
Washington would have been great.
So, yeah. So Bob Melvin takes that off the table. There's no, we can't question the manager's experience. You know, I think if this doesn't work out, I think we have to really start looking at, I mean, really start looking at AJ and the system behind it. I mean, the development, you know, our prospects aren't what they used to be. There's not a huge glut of these guys coming through the system anymore. They've already traded most of them away. And I don't know. I have questions about the medical staff as far as how they handle injuries. And this is all kind of under AJ Preller's regime. You know, he does have pretty much the same type of control that Billy Beane has. He's like the president and, you know, he makes all the decisions. And if it can't work with Bob Melvin, I don't know. I'm interested in what this takes off the table for the fan base when they're evaluating this team. Like, we can't really complain about the manager anymore.
Yeah.
And where does that go? I don't know.
Yeah, an adult has shown up. That's what it feels like.
So that's another question I have real quick. I know going off script a little bit, but sure. So do you think that there is a leader currently on the roster, or do you think that that's something that they're going to have to address
that too. Yeah.
In the offseason? Because Manny Machado, for all the great things that he is, I don't know yet if he's a leader. I think he can be one, but you always kind of need that captain in the clubhouse. Like me and Julio, one of our favorite players is Marcus Semien, because he was an amazing captain for these A's teams the past 3 or 4 years. And like the team really rallied around him and really like respected him. And when he said something, everybody listened. Like, do you guys see that on the current roster? Or do you think that's something you're gonna have to find in the offseason?
You know, when we experience, Travis, you agree with this. When we watch Manny, you know, in the dugout and, you know, we watch him on the field and he's putting his arms around guys. He seems like he's the leader, the outward looking leader of the team. He's the face of the franchise. His signing here was one of the most important days in Padres history. It really is, you know?
But
the results haven't been great. I mean, I don't know if he is a great leader, especially what really happened with the Padres this year is, you know, at the trade deadline, there was a threat. It came out that the team was really seriously trying to trade former Royal, Eric Hosmer. And it kind of wrecked it, from what we've been told. It kind of wrecked the trust between the clubhouse and ownership. And, you know, I love Manny Machado. He's pretty much a flawless baseball player on the field. And I love the idea of him being a leader, but I think the results of last season has given me a pathway into just questioning whether or not if he's up to what it really means to be a leader. If you have one of the worst first basemen in the National League have the potential to be traded, and, you know, that just kind of wrecks everything for half a season or a third of a season. I don't know if, I think a true leader might be able to solve that or get past that, to at least salvage a season. And that didn't happen. So I don't know. I know everybody saw, it's interesting to you guys talking about the Tatis and Manny blow up. I mean, I think that just got heated, and I don't know how much of that really factors into it, but it was something that popped up on the national radar, is like, what's going on in San Diego? Can Manny be the man here? And I think that we have the right to question that going into next season. Like, is he a real leader, or does he kind of perform that live? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, my opinion of that situation, I really respected him for that. I thought that showed leadership, that he was willing to call out the star of the team on something that cost him. Yeah.
Honestly, now that we're having this conversation too, I'm just thinking, like, you know, I could see the Padres trying to make a run at Marcus Semien now.
Yeah.
And that's somebody who
100%.
That's somebody who, like, yep, that's your leader. He's going to go in there from day one. And
Bob
he's
loves
going
Marcus.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if you guys somehow end up with multiple guys who've been on the A's throughout these years he's been there. Cause like, guys love him that much. Like, guys love him. Well, they'll fall. They'll walk off a bridge for him.
Bob was the one who named Marcus the captain. He was the one who like made it known that he was the guy in the clubhouse. So I
there was totally also a little bias because he also went to Cal. So yeah, let's too. Throw that out there. So that too.
How does that infrastructure work with Bob though? Does so if a player like that is on the team, does he publicly pinpoint that? Or I mean, he obviously makes him captain, but is there subtle quotes that he lets out there? How does fan base know that?
Wasn't it like a bunch of players had like slipped it. Yeah.
Straight up
but
during
the press
conference. He doesn't
make it known. He doesn't put like a C on their chest. Right.
Straight up during his press conference. It wasn't his press conference. He did it just shows you how awesome he is. He actually did a interview with Brody Brazil, he's been with NBC Sports Bay Area for forever now, but he's a massive A's fan. He covers A's and he did an interview with him and he brought up Chad Pinder. Cause he's like, oh yeah, Chad Pinder, he's going to become a manager one day, like already. And if he just, I think the two things you got to realize, like he's going to really get the most out of all these men and find parts of them that they've probably never discovered. And it's going to be extra brownie points if you happen to be a catcher, because dude loves his catchers as a former major league catcher.
Oh, so I did not know this about him.
Victor, Austin Nola and Victor Caratini getting his good cards.
Oh, I love Bob now. I love Bob. If he loves catchers, I love Bob.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Just think about throughout this last, 8 year or 10 years he was here, he's had some really good catchers. He's been able to turn their careers around. Your former boy, Derek Norris,
True.
Problematic a little bit.
Brand new World Series champion, Stephen Vogt, as of tonight. Mm-hmm. And then now Sean Murphy's kind of taken that guard as like the next guy is going to take that next step with like leadership and what it means to be a catcher. And a lot of it's because of Bowmel.
And he coddles that. He like kind of brings that along. Like he doesn't let catchers call games immediately. He kind of like, he starts it off. And then once he feels that the catcher has a feel for the game, feel for the pitcher, feel for his stuff, then he'll let him start doing it.
Yeah. Bowmel, I got to get that in mind.
Yeah, we got to get used to that.
Yeah.
Bowmel. Yeah. That's his name.
Bowmel.
I think the one thing, look, it's not all, flowers and daisies with him. There are some things that will be frustrating at times with him. And I think the one thing that's really good about him, he's adaptable, but sometimes it kind of skews a little bit. So like sometimes he is a little bit old school. Case in point was this year. Frankie Montas, second half of the season, went on a freaking roll. He was like the best pitcher in the American League this past, during the last half of the season. And a big part of it was because Sean Murphy wasn't his catcher. He was having either Yan Gomes was either behind the plate or when Aramis Garcia was up or Austin Allen. It was one of those guys. Mm. So there was one start, I want to say in August, where Sean Murphy caught him and it was his worst start of like the season. And Bob Mel, they asked him during a press conference, what's going on? Like he's always been with like a certain guys and we've noticed that he's not as good when Murphy's catching him.
I think he had six starts in a row with Yan and he was just killing it.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, so do you think that guy should have the individual pitchers or catchers? And he doesn't agree with that, which is at this point, the numbers show it. It's way too
it's
evident.
It's a real thing.
It's an absolute real thing. You know, you guys have it with Darvish and Caratini. I know Yankees got it with, Higashioka and Cole, like it's an absolute thing. And I think he is smart enough that he does adapt to it, but you just got to realize like there's going to be a few moments where you're going to bump. And Chris, you mentioned it earlier about how the first few weeks of the season, the A's were just going on this base stealing like galore. They're just going crazy. And then it went silent for like a couple months. And you can just kind of tell like the offense kind of fell off a little bit with that. I'm like, why did we stop doing that? And it kind of just goes into that philosophy of just like, the money ball, you don't steal kind of thing. And that's something that does get frustrating with him is like I don't know if it's a pride thing. I don't know if it's maybe it's an ego thing that even though he's like the most mellow person ever, that might get in the way sometimes. And you just got to be aware when you go into the season, there's going to be some times where like, this is kind of the obvious thing that we do nowadays and you're not doing it. Like, why is that?
Julio, that also could have came from up top where Billy and David show him the numbers where it's like, hey, these aren't as effective as you think they are. And then he just stops. So we don't know, but yeah, he does do that.
Is there, I mean, I keep going, I just want to understand your guys' experience. Is there a lot of, in A's, in the A's fan base, is there a lot of guessing between who's calling the shots between a Billy and whoever the manager, I guess, you know, Bob and Billy? Is there like different factions in the fan base that kind of lean towards different ideas in that regard? Like, this is obviously a Billy decision, but really there's no evidence on either way, or how close to the vest does that organization hold things like that?
I mean, I think clearly there was a partnership. So, I mean, it went on for 11 years. So there's clearly, you know, it's going both ways. There's clearly a partnership in how this team is managed and how this team is run. But, you know, Billy being such an analytic guy, and Bob's an analytic guy too. Like, don't get us wrong. Like, that's his bread and butter. That's how he got successful. Was he really embraced analytics back when he was with the Diamondbacks? But I just think that, yeah, I mean, like, they have, you know, the A's invented sabermetrics and they invented analytics. So, like, they just have an insanely good analytics department. So when numbers come down, especially in a game like the, you know, in today's game, that are just so overwhelmingly, like, in your face, like, hey, I know you're doing this, but it's not necessarily working. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, yeah, well, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it's going to run out after a while. I mean, like, Dave Roberts is a good example of that too. Like, he's a stickler to his analytics. He doesn't let his pitchers go past six innings. He still won a World Series, but, like, at the end of the day, like, well, there's, it's, well, you know,
yeah, I mean, you can't, that's generous.
Yeah.
Asterisk.
You can't, you know, sometimes those numbers are just like, you know, they're just showing your face. So I don't know. I mean, there's no real sense of that. I mean, we know a lot of the beat writers for the A's, and they've never told us anything like that. So I don't know. No. Yeah.
A's fans are either you love the both of them or you hate the both of them. It's never like, okay, oh, Billy's tight, but Bob sucks, or vice versa. It's always one or the other.
Yeah. And then everybody just agrees they should spend more money. Right. That's the,
yeah, everybody says, fuck you, John Fisher, spend more.
Yeah, right.
To just show you kind of the depth of how cheap they went this year, there's a handful of things. We actually had, I got to give a quick shout out to our guy, Brian the Kingpin. He's also one of the guys for Last Dive Bar in Oakland. So
okay. He's a pretty, like, Twitter famous A's fan. So.
But we had him on the show a few months ago because they announced that they jacked the prices of season tickets. And he was just kind of venting his frustration. It's like, you jack these prices, you jack the price on concessions, you jack the prices on parking, when this year there was no promotions at all at the stadium. Yeah. They had one day where they were giving away a foam Triton when the King Triton thing was going on for a minute with the A's. And then they gave a t-shirt giveaway, and that was it. Whereas I lived down the street from Dodger Stadium. I went to one game and I got a freaking Timeless Order bobblehead. I went to an Angels game and I forgot, but it's like I was like, okay, maybe it's just a post-COVID thing. Maybe we're not going to see it as normal. No, every team was still having these massive promotions all the time. It's just our ownership is cheap. So now you're seeing, like, you're going to see this all the time next year. You're going to see beat writers around the country who are going to be saying, oh, look, the fans aren't showing up in Oakland. Well, yeah, you screwed all the fans over. You're not making this an environment that people want to go out of their way and go to anymore, because you're overcharging everything and the quality on the field is gone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
we know that.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I was like, you get it.
No, man. But I mean, the hollow thing that we have is that, you know, they actually spend money and they can still screw it up, which is what happened last year. And that's
talk the Angels.
Talk to the end. Yeah, right? Yes. Yeah. Well, hey guys, thanks for coming on. It's been really fun talking to you, and maybe we'll hit you guys back up next time there's an interleague series or something like that. But you know, I hope it works out. You guys are in a manager search, right? So how's that shaken out? What's the
have you even processed that yet?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it'd be great full circle if Ron Washington came back to the team.
Hey, yeah, that'd be great.
Right, that's
but I don't know if that's too likely. They'll probably hire someone in-house who is going to go with the flow of the front office and who wants to do a rebuild. So, but we'll see.
Cool. Well, you can check out the Town Tailgate podcast on all platforms where podcasts are, and again, thanks a lot, guys. It's been a lot of fun, and thanks for the manager. That's
nice. Yeah, you're welcome.
Also, if you're on Twitter, please give us a follow at the Town Tailgate. Baseball's officially over, but doesn't mean we're not going to be not talking about A's baseball or just baseball in general. Chris and I are avid baseball fans our whole lives. So even throughout this postseason, we were live tweeting throughout games and stuff. So make sure to come give us a follow.
We might throw some Raiders and Warriors tweets in there, though.
That's fine.
We're definitely not doing any Raiders tweets today. That's for sure.
Yeah. And anyway. check out their last episode, because they kind of go into even more detail about the Bob Melvin transaction, I guess. So yeah, check out that. It's the latest one on the pod.
I promise you guys, you will enjoy Bob Melvin. You don't need to be cynical. Okay. I promise you.
Okay.
I'm much more stoked after this. And hopefully we even have baseball next year, right? Isn't that a thing we should be concerned about?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
We have some really good people in charge, and they're going to handle it. So that's good. all right. Chris and Julio, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you can check out.
Thanks, guys. Good chatting with you.
All righty. Check out the Kept Faith at theketfaith.com and IG and Twitter and Facebook. And Travis, we'll do another show in this month, I think, if work stoppage.
Something's got to happen. Yeah.
I don't know.
Something's got to be on the stove.
Keep the faith, guys. All right. Bye. Let's go, Padres.